You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. That's right, because it's Wednesday, that means it's Draft Wednesday across this Locked On Podcast Network. Download the Draft app or go to draft.com and use the promo code LORockets. And from there, you can get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit using that LORockets promo code. So as we chat on this Wednesday morning, it's the, third consecutive day of no basketball for the Rockets. A very strange stretch of the year. They went from Wednesday to Sunday with no games. Now you go from Sunday night in Los Angeles not playing again until Thursday night in Utah. So 3 days off, the Rockets have actually been staying in California. They practiced today while they're officially listing Ryan Anderson as questionable due to his back spasms. He did go through practice. Signs look pretty good with the time off that he's going to be able to give it a go tomorrow night in Utah. So, because there's no new news from a basketball standpoint, only one game in 8 days for the Rockets, a very odd point in the schedule, I thought this was an appropriate point to look at a few bigger picture items, odds and ends, that we may not have the chance to do in our usual daily grind, in which we have three or four Rockets games per week. And the first thing that caught my eye late last night was the straw poll from the Washington Post. I believe it's run by Tim Bontemps. Apologies if I butchered his last name. I haven't officially met Tim yet. But it's the MVP straw poll for the NBA. They did this last year, and what they do, they cross-section 105 voters from around the league. It's pretty equally weighted, i.e. you don't have too many voters in Houston and not enough in Golden State, or vice versa. You have a fair representation from around the league. Some voters are the actual MVP panel, others are not, but the idea is to get a fair cross-section, and generally last year it was, I would say, a pretty good barometer. And I know a lot of Rockets fans kind of recoil at it, because I know for large parts of the year that they had Harden leading that race. Well, ultimately last year, as I've said on the show, I think Harden did lead the race majority of the year, and just the stars aligned for Russell Westbrook in the last 3 years where that narrative took hold. And ultimately, Westbrook did win, and he won by a fairly comparable amount to what the straw poll showed. So I do think those things have a lot of value. And the good news is that as we chat on this Wednesday, James Harden, according to the Washington Post straw poll, folks, he is in firm command. Of the 105 voters, Harden has 73 first-place votes, 27 second-place votes, and 5 third-place votes. He is... every single one of the 105 voters had Harden as one of their top three picks. Second place is LeBron James, but the margin is very large. 73 first-place votes for Harden to just 24 for LeBron. LeBron, he was in 102 of the 105 ballots as far as top three placement, which can be big from a point standpoint. Harden was top three in all 105 ballots. So right now, even with LeBron playing phenomenal basketball at percentages that are just comical, you still have Harden leading the way. I think partly based on the Rockets' superior record, they do have a head-to-head win over LeBron James and the Cavaliers. But beyond just the obvious stats, the 30-10 that Harden's putting up, the record, as I've said before, I do think there's a narrative out there that Harden has been shortchanged. And credit yourself, some Rockets fans have done a great job of communicating their message to the media about why Harden should have won a year ago, why he should have won 3 years ago in the race against Stephen Curry. And so I do think that if it's close, there's an idea in the NBA media circles, and I've talked to many voters, and they are aware of this, that Harden probably got the short end of the stick twice. Not only did he get the short end of the stick twice, with a goalpost that seemed to move. So I do think there's a little bit of sympathy to James Harden, especially if the Rockets keep winning. I think that narrative works in his favor, especially if, as I've said before, the only guy I see on the radar screen is LeBron James. And while LeBron is having a phenomenal season, there are a couple of things that to me are limiting factors for LeBron. First, he has won before, and while his season is really good, there's certainly not the round number extravaganza that there was with Westbrook's triple-double average last year. And also, because LeBron James has won MVP before, it's not like last year where it was Westbrook's finest season ever and in the eyes of many media members, a career year for him. As good as this is for LeBron, he's had lots of career years. It's LeBron James, probably the greatest player in the history of the sport. So I'm not meaning to diminish it. What I'm looking at this from is the standpoint of a media voter. I don't think you're going to see just a sense of urgency to give this to LeBron that you did with Westbrook last year. Now, certainly, if LeBron earns it, he can, but I don't think the media is going to have quite the same narrative that there was pushing Russell Westbrook's campaign a year ago. Besides that, the other thing that I think works well for Harden in this race is that I just don't see, especially in the Eastern Conference, the Cavaliers or LeBron James pushing it to the extent that Russell Westbrook did last year. Part of the reason that the Thunder, or Westbrook, I should say, had so much success was that the Thunder as a team did not. They had to rely on Westbrook, and of course that drove up his counting stats because the team without him was not very good. And it was a team that really should have been about a 500 team, slightly above. Now, Westbrook's exploits late in close games were tremendous. That pushed them to 47 wins, and that played a role in him getting the MVP race. But the point is, they had to lean on Russell Westbrook to play an absurd amount of minutes per night, do an absurd amount of the heavy lifting. That's not really the case with the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers are as veteran as it gets. Maybe Boston, if they continue their current level of play, now at 21-4, maybe that lingers, but I don't think the Cavaliers, as shown by last year, that I believe they were the two seed, and that did not seem to particularly faze them in a playoff setting. The Cavaliers are the ultimate veteran team. I don't think they're going to be playing, assuming they're locked into a one or two seed, whatever it may be, I don't think you're going to see them going all out for every single game. They're going to be methodical about the approach for LeBron James. You're going to see occasional rest games. You're going to see minutes where he's capped at 30, especially when you get closer to the playoffs. February, March, April, that time frame. So I just don't think you're going to see, you know, I would say shameless stat padding, which I've seen some reference to that with Westbrook. That might be a little extreme, but certainly just the style at which the Thunder played, combination with Westbrook's personal sense of urgency and the narrative that was out there, all those things together, and all of a sudden it was the perfect storm for late in the year Westbrook to make up a lot of ground. And I think as it, you know, the last couple of weeks of the year, besides Harden getting hurt and being fairly inefficient, it was at the same time as Westbrook just playing out of his mind. I think we all remember the last 12 points he scored in Dallas. Then I think the night that sealed it for him was when he secured the triple-double average. He either had a 40 or 50-point triple-double, something ridiculous in Denver, but it was culminated with a 35-foot three at the buzzer to win the game. And the reason it was that way, again, the Thunder needed all of that just to get in the playoffs, just to scratch and claw their way to a sixth seed, to the mid to upper 40s in win total. That same sense of urgency is not going to be there for the Cavaliers, and so that's why I don't think LeBron's individual numbers, while good, I don't think they're going to be as just jaw-dropping, at least from a topical sense, the traditional numbers like Russell Westbrook's were last year. And as long as they aren't, I think the Rockets, especially if they're a better team, especially if they're going pound for pound with the Golden State Warriors, I think the odds are good that this is going to be James Harden's award. And I think it speaks volumes that even with the Cleveland Cavaliers, again, 17-7, second in the East, Cavaliers have won 12 in a row. They're playing phenomenal ball. I believe they won every game since that loss in Houston. And yet, with all of that, with LeBron just absurd, laughable efficiency, again, the Cavaliers, 17-7, just off the charts in terms of their last 12 games. LeBron's numbers aren't even human. You have a guy shooting 58% from the field, over 41% from three, averaging 28.5 assists per game, 8 rebounds. And even with all of that, Harden is still the leader. So for all the talk you hear about Harden being overlooked, folks, he's not being overlooked now because, LeBron is having an incredible season. The Cavaliers have won 12 in a row, and yet still Harden is firmly in first place in the tabulations by the Washington Post, which were released on Tuesday. So can things change? Certainly they can. They can change on a dime. As I said, the Washington Post poll showed Harden leading for much of last year until the very end of the year, and just circumstances aligned, and Russell ended up having the perfect close to the year. He also had the built-in narrative. This year, I don't expect it to happen. I don't think LeBron quite has the same built-in narrative to start with. I don't think there's the urgency to give it to him. And above all else, I don't really see the Cavaliers or LeBron having the personal sense of urgency to play extreme minutes or situations down the stretch of the year to just completely just to give the sense of upheaval that happened in March and April a year ago. So while yes, it's early, we're just 22 games into 82. If Harden stays healthy, if the Rockets' level of current play holds, I think you should feel pretty good about his chances of winning this award. I thought that before tonight, but certainly seeing the results from the Washington Post poll, I think you have to feel pretty good about where you're at through the first almost 30% of the year. We should mention that Kyrie Irving is in third place. But folks, this is a two-man race at this point between Harden and LeBron. I know there are a few people in the media that have thrown out, oh, the Celtics are 21-4. They're a good story. There's no Gordon Hayward. But folks, Kyrie has 8 first-place votes, 8 second-place votes. That means that 87 of the 105 voters is that right? I'm doing my math in my head right now. So 105 voters, subtract 16, 89 of the 105 voters did not even have Kyrie in their top two. So I know there's a lot made from the talking heads, but folks, the folks who actually follow this league on a day-to-day basis, I don't think Kyrie Irving is in the same league as James Harden or LeBron James from the standpoint of their performance. And I think the poll reflects that while Kyrie is an interesting story from a few of the talking heads, there's nothing really there in terms of his MVP chances right now, and we're not an insignificant portion into the season. It's Harden with LeBron somewhat closely behind him, but there's no one else even on the horizon at this point in time. Now, we'll talk about the Rockets competitors from a team standpoint in a minute. I want to lead off with the MVP because that's the most direct Rockets angle, with Harden in first, according to the Washington Post poll. We're going to talk about the team dynamics, what we've seen in the past couple of days, in a few moments. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at the Draft app. Because, folks, if the Rockets are off, I don't know about y'all, but for me, that's a chance that I watch these other games, and while I care about them, it's not the same as watching the Rockets. It's not the same level of passion. So one way I like to get into these games and follow these other teams, it's to play fantasy. And more than that, it's to play fantasy for real money. To play fantasy hoops over at the Draft app or at draft.com. And folks, one of the reasons I like playing with Draft is that your chances there, well, they're better by 80% than by salary cap sites. You're not getting crushed by the pros. And folks, it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded that Draft app as well. It's just so simple. You can play in a real draft now. It can be done in under 5 minutes and you get paid out the next day. Drafts fill out every second so you can join them whenever you want. And it's so simple. Again, you draft every day. It's a snake draft. And from there, folks, you don't even have to worry about setting your lineup, because if there's an injury, then they make the change for you. It is that simple. It's low maintenance. It's high customization. It's simple. And the best part of all of it is that all new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, if you use the promo code LO Rockets. That's right, you get to play in a real money draft for free just by using that LO Rockets promo code. But folks, it gets even better than that, because Draft is so sure that they will, well, that you'll be in love with their experience, that they are offering Locked On Rockets listeners a money back guarantee of up to $100. So folks, just search for Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LO Rockets. And folks, if you want to play with me or anyone else across the Locked On network, it's pretty simple. Just search for Locked On Fantasy and you can find all of us, your host, your fellow listeners, and yeah, let's play against each other and let's make these off days for the Rockets fun by seeing what else is going on around the association. So jumping back into the show, led off talking about the MVP race, which is about the individuals. And I think that's probably the closest Rockets angle, specific angle there is, because everything else is speculative, because of course over the course of 82 games, lots of things are going to change. In the MVP race, we know Harden is out in front, and I guess at this point in the year, we know the Rockets are out in front. They're 18-4, tops in the Western Conference, but of course there's a long season, things can change. The Warriors, the Rockets have a plus 11.4 differential in terms of points. Warriors, 2 games back in the loss column, they're 19-6, but their differential plus 11.3. They're right behind the Rockets. They've won their last 4 in a row. So while the Rockets do have a 2-game lead and the tiebreaker, there's a long way to go, nearly or more than 70% left, I should say, and the Warriors seem to be peaking as well. The upside for the Rockets in terms of the race for the number one seed, and I want to turn this talking about the team, because with the Rockets off, it's a good opportunity to talk about what else is going on, what these races are in the Western Conference, that the Rockets predominantly right now seem to be focused on the race for the number one seed. And of course, the primary challenger is the Warriors. And the Warriors, yes, the point differential is quality, they've won 4 in a row, all that kind of stuff, except, as I'm sure you saw in the last minute of their win at New Orleans, a pretty impressive win in which they were down 20 at the half and won comfortably by 10, flipped it by 30 points in the second half. Stephen Curry turned his ankle. He was on crutches after the game. went through an MRI today. They're saying no structural damage. I don't exactly buy that because, folks, you're not out for weeks at a time and on crutches if there's no structural damage. Now, there's no all-out tear. That's why he's not out month. They're not declaring that. It's probably a grade one sprain and not a, you know, a grade three. It's not a rupture or something like that. But, folks, there's some structural damage. It's just not a complete tear to the point where there's a defined timetable or any necessary surgery or anything of that nature. So while they say there's no structural damage, what they essentially mean by that is that there's no obvious long-term mechanism or scenario in which he's going to be out for a large portion of the season. They're not saying there's no damage at all. Just use your head. Of course there's damage. It's not a matter of if there's no damage, then yeah, give him a few days off and why couldn't he be fine to return? The ankle injury, they're saying that he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks, not that he will return in 2 weeks, be reevaluated. It's noteworthy because, of course, the first 3 or 4 years of Stephen Curry's NBA career had a long history of ankle issues. Some folks referred to him as glass ankles at one point. Now, they did a lot of strengthening work with him. They did some very interesting exercises. I believe they got him using certain braces or shoes, whatever it may be, to the point where these past 3 or 4 seasons, he's been largely injury-free. And I don't think because of one injury that all of a sudden he's injury-prone again, because folks, anyone can freakishly turn their ankle. That stuff happens, and knock on wood, you hope the same thing doesn't happen to Chris Paul or James Harden. But given his history of ankle issues, well, I don't think this is necessarily correlated with that. When all of a sudden you have a situation that was known as chronic, and the same issue, even if it's coincidental, pops up, then I don't see them pushing the issue, especially when, even without him, you still have Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and a large lead and pretty much everyone else in the Western Conference other than the Rockets. So I think the Warriors are going to be conservative with this, and it absolutely gives the Rockets an opportunity because they're already up 2 games. They have the tiebreaker, and folks, if the Rockets keep winning 82% of the games where they are now, that difference in the loss column, again, if they win the tiebreaker and all they've got to do is win one of the 2 games in Houston in January, and they've got it because the Rockets and Warriors only play 3 times and the Rockets already have 1 victory, so all they need is 1 more, and voila, there's the tiebreaker. Well, folks, Curry's injury could make this a very tough battle for the Warriors because all of a sudden there's, you know, if you're winning an 82% clip, there's not that many raw losses to be had. Yeah, you can point to 60 games left, but if you win 80-plus percentage of those, then how many raw losses are there? And all of a sudden, if the Rockets can win one of those Warriors games and have at least a 3-game lead from the perspective of the difference in the win-loss column and the loss column and the tiebreaker, then all of a sudden it gets very difficult for the Warriors to pull off the math to get all the way to the 1 seed. And yes, the caveat that goes with all of this, of course, the Warriors, even if they're the 2 seed, even if they're at home court, they're still a different animal in the playoffs. And the Rockets having home court advantage, even if they have game 1, game 2, game 5, game 7 at Toyota Center, it guarantees nothing. Warriors are still probably favored, but at least it gives you a reasonable chance. I'm not saying that winning the number 1 seed in the regular season guarantees anything. It just obviously improves your odds, and that in and of itself is a big thing to focus on if you're a Rockets fan. But as far as the Curry injury and how this ties into it. First off, the first Rockets-Warriors game in January is January 4th. That's less than a month from now. I don't think it's a given that Stephen Curry plays in that game. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So that means he's for sure out 2 weeks no matter what. I can't imagine he's just going to be cleared to return right then. I would say at least there's probably going to be a week or so that they slowly scale him back up, see if he makes it through practice, make sure things are going fine. It sounds like there's going to be 2 weeks of pretty much no activity at all. So I would say 3 weeks is the earliest reasonable timetable that he can return. That'd be around Christmas or slightly thereafter. So I don't think it's a given that he returns by January 4th at all. And even if he does, it's possible there are minutes restrictions. It's possible that he may take off days here and there. So I don't buy the thing that, though, this is short-term injury, the Warriors dodged a bullet. No, it's something, especially given his history, that they're going to have to tightly manage, I would say, for the majority of the regular season. And it certainly could help the Rockets, especially if Chris Paul's issues are in the rearview mirror with regards to his knee, and that's out of the equation. Now, the bad news. In theory, you say, well, Stephen Curry's not going to play, then, yeah, that gives the Rockets opportunity to expand their lead, which is already at 2 games with the tiebreaker, as we chat early this Wednesday morning. That's the good. The bad, look at the Warriors' schedule. They play at Charlotte tonight. That's Charlotte's record is, their differential is better than their record. They're almost at a break even, but they're nothing to write home about. Now, I know the Warriors, they take everybody's best shot. It's always like a game seven, so we'll see what happens. Then they play at Detroit Friday night. That's conceivably losable. Detroit's been a very good team this year. But then you look at who they've got until Christmas. They've got at Detroit. I mean, yeah, that's Friday. And then starting next week, home against Portland, home against Dallas, at the Lakers, home for Memphis, home for the Lakers, home for the Nuggets. Folks, if not for Stephen Curry's injury, I could easily see them reeling off 10 or more in a row. And in theory, they still could, because it's not like with Kevin Durant, Draymond, Klay, that they're all of a sudden in a bad spot at all. So that's the downside, is that if you're looking at it from a competitive advantage standpoint for the Rockets, Curry's injury comes at a good time for the Warriors. But the flip side is that even if they just lose one or two games in that stretch, then all of a sudden what that means is that they are, you know, not fully taking advantage of a stretch of the year that otherwise you would have expected them to do. So if you're a Rockets fan, I don't think the Rockets are going to make that much hay in the next couple of weeks, especially because the Rockets' schedule starts to stiffen up a little bit. You have the Spurs coming in next weekend. You also have Portland and Milwaukee, a couple of lively teams coming to Toyota Center next week. You also have road games this week at Utah, who's playing incredibly well at the moment, and then at Portland Saturday night. I don't think the Rockets... No, the Rockets are playing phenomenal ball right now, 18-4 on the year. They've won 13 of their last 14 games. So the Rockets could just keep winning all of these and prove me wrong. But on paper, it's a tougher stretch for the Rockets than it is for the Warriors. So if you were a drop, if you're a Warriors fan, if you're going to have an issue with Stephen Curry, this is probably the time you'd want to have it. But the flip side to that is that even if it costs them just one or two games in that stretch, and let's say the Rockets break even, then all of a sudden that could be a net win for the Rockets down the line. So I think there's going to be a tendency, if Stephen Curry comes back in 3 or 4 weeks, to say, hey, the Rockets were up 2 games with the tiebreaker when Curry went out, and here's what they are when he comes back. And then if it's the same or even a game or two less, to feel like it was a wasted opportunity. And I don't think that's really the case. Because at this point in the year, you look at the overall strength of schedule. The Rockets are 21st, the Warriors are 11th. It's not like the Warriors have played murderer's row, but they have played a tougher schedule than the Rockets. This is the stretch in which it largely evens out for those two teams. So even if the margin doesn't expand, and it's possible it could, if the Rockets just keep blowing the doors off of everyone, and who knows what happens with the Warriors now without Curry, but if it doesn't, I don't think you look back in a month and say this was a wasted opportunity. Because when you get into January, not only do the Warriors have 2 road games against the Rockets, but folks, they've got a 5-game road trip in the middle of the month, with 4 of the 5 games being at Milwaukee, at Toronto, that's on a back-to-back, then at Cleveland, at Chicago, that's the one easy one, and then finishing up at Houston on a Saturday night primetime game. So that schedule is going to get tougher. Then they have the Warriors at the end of that month, another Saturday night primetime game, and at Utah. So the schedule does get more difficult for the Warriors in January. This is the easy stretch for them now. So there might not be immediate visible dividends from the Stephen Curry injury from the standpoint of I don't think the Warriors are going to go on any sort of long losing streak without him. But even if the Rockets are just able to hold steady through this stretch, through these next 2 or 3 weeks without Curry, at the same time, that could end up being a net win in the big picture, and that it's a stretch of the schedule that on paper would it seem to favor the Warriors in terms of making up some ground, whereas now with the Curry injury, maybe all of a sudden you can craft a route for the Rockets to stay level with this solid lead they have over the Warriors right now, which as we record is 2 games in the loss column with the tiebreaker. Now we spent the last few minutes talking about the Rockets and the Warriors, because that's the most visible race for the number one seed. I want to close out by talking about the closest competitors to the Rockets that are not the Warriors. You hope that that does not become a viable threat. Obviously, the one seed is the first thing on everyone's mind right now, but worst case, you want to secure the number two seed, which means you have home court not just in the first round, but the second round as well, which is what you did not have against the Spurs a year ago. And the closest competitor there is the Spurs. They're 16-8. They were your biggest threat last year. They're 4 games behind you, well, 3 games behind you, but 4 in the loss column as of now, and that's without Kawhi Leonard. And so if you just look at the records, you can say, wow, the Spurs are only 3 games back when you factor in 18-4 versus 16-8, and they're doing it without Kawhi. What happens when Kawhi returns?
And that's one way you can look at it. I just don't necessarily think that that is a realistic representation of where the Rockets and Spurs are. First off, you look at the differential, Rockets plus 11.4, best in the league. I think that speaks perfectly to their level of dominance. The Spurs, even though they're the 3 seed, even though they're 16-8, they're plus 3.6, which does not exactly suggest a team that is tracking to win 55-plus or even 60-plus games, which is what they would need to really compete with the Rockets, barring some sort of extraordinary injury. Now, the Spurs are going to get Kawhi Leonard back, so they are going to certainly gain some efficiency from that. I'm not oblivious to that. Kawhi Leonard, is not done for the year by any stretch of the imagination. The flip side, folks, again, the plus 3.6, there's a ways for them to go, even if you add Kawhi to that. Secondly, the strength of schedule, folks. The Spurs have played more home games than road games, but more than that, they have the 28th ranked schedule in the NBA to this point. That is the third easiest. Only the Blazers and Denver are below them. And by the way, the Blazers and Denver are the teams in the 4 and 5 spots in the Western Conference right now. So it's not like any of those teams is particularly close to the Rockets in record. The Spurs 16-8, the Blazers 13-10, the Nuggets 13-10. But every other metric, the differential isn't close. Spurs 3.6, Blazers plus 3.2, Nuggets are actually negative 0.2. And above all of that, all three have actually played easier schedules than the Rockets as well. So, barring injury, barring something unexpected, I don't see a challenger that's not the Warriors that has a path to the Rockets. But the closest one you could come up with would be the Jazz, who going into Tuesday night had looked tremendous, had won 6 games in a row, who had a plus 5 differential, which was third best after only the Rockets and Warriors in the Western Conference. And yeah, despite all those advantages, they blew a huge lead in Oklahoma City, got outscored 32-14 by the Thunder, and now the Jazz, with that loss, have fallen back to barely above 500 at 13-12. Their winning streak snap. Thunder now at 11-12. They've won 3 in a row, and they're almost back to 500, but of course the Thunder, 12 losses, way behind the Rockets now. I'm not going to give that much credence to a team that's 8 games back in the loss column and would not even be in the playoffs if the season ended today. So, in terms of teams that are reasonably in striking distance, the Spurs, the Blazers, and the Nuggets are the closest on paper at 8, 10, and 10 losses, respectively. But between the differentials and between the schedule, there's nothing there that suggests that there's a run unless the Rockets' level of play substantially falls off. And of course, the biggest factor there would be some sort of unexpected injury, particularly if it's to James Harden, Chris Paul, one of the regulars. But barring that, I really do think at this point it's a two-horse race. The Rockets look firmly better than every other team in the Western Conference other than the Warriors. The Warriors, of course, that's who you're worried about. That's who you're worried about every year. But the injury to Steph Curry, otherwise, I think these last 3 weeks or so of December would be pretty dicey. But the injury to Steph Curry, maybe that gives you an avenue to where if the Rockets continue to play very strong basketball, that at least you can have a path, hopefully, to at least stay in a quality position to the way you are now. Even if you're not expanding the lead, to at least keep it reasonable within striking distance. And then in January, I think there's a chance, obviously, 2 home games, the Rockets against the Warriors, 2 at Toyota Center, 1 Thursday night, 1 Saturday night. Those should be tremendous crowds. I think that gives you a good shot. If you win those 2 games, you can win both of them. Not only do you win the tiebreaker, you pick up 2 games right there. But then beyond that, the Warriors have a much tougher schedule, and so I think that's where you can conceivably make some hay from a scheduling standpoint. So, with that, I believe we can wrap up our off-day episode of Locked on Rockets, your daily home for podcast commentary on the Houston Rockets. Can't wait until, well, we actually get back to basketball tomorrow when we can actually analyze basketball games. I know we're stretching a little bit for content, but folks, when your team's as good as the Rockets, then yeah, it's a good time to compare to the rest of the league because, well, it's fun to say that you're playing better than anybody else. And also, of course, the MVP race with the Washington Post straw poll showing James Harden firmly in command of first place in that as of Tuesday night. So, getting ready for tomorrow night's game in Utah, I've been saying on my Twitter, at Ben Dubose, it's a losable game because the Jazz have been playing tremendous ball. But I think seeing the Jazz, again, 194 losers to the Thunder, outscored 32-14 in the fourth quarter, I think that pokes some holes in their momentum. Also, Rudy Gobert, he's back after missing a lot of time with an injury, but Gobert, in his first game, he did play 27 minutes. That's a good sign that he's able to handle the workload, but 5 fouls in those 27 minutes, only 5 points, 6 rebounds, largely outplayed by Steven Adams, who had 20-9. I think there's an opportunity for Clint Capella to go out and have a quality game the same way he did the first night that the Rockets played the Jazz. Of course, that was the absurd game in which James Harden came up barely short of Calvin Murphy's franchise record in points. So, it's a tough game on paper. The Jazz are going to be home. It's the nationally televised game on TNT. It's not going to be easy. But at the same time, the Jazz's winning streak is snapped. I think the Rockets, certainly they're rested. I think if you have the same version of Eric Gordon that you had on Sunday, we talked on Twitter about Eric Gordon and how he seemed to have an extra burst in his step. It's a game that even with the crowd, everything else that goes with kind of being the hunted, which is what the Rockets are transitioning to right now in NBA circles, the Rockets are the better team. And hopefully they go out and prove that tomorrow night. Until then, though, if you want to keep up with me on Twitter and you're not already doing so, you can do that at Ben DuBose, or you can follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnRockets. You can also email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor of this program, just as our friends at the Draft app were today. Remember, download that Draft app or go to draft.com and use the promo code LORockets, and you can get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. Also, if you're not satisfied, folks, they've got a money-back guarantee for up to $100. They're so confident you're going to like your services. Again, that's our sponsor over at the Draft app or at draft.com, as I've said all the time. If you want to support Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets, best way to do that, support our sponsors, and that means the Draft app, draft.com, using that LORockets promo code. So for now, I hope everybody enjoys their Wednesday and, well, enjoy the rest, because tomorrow night we finally get back to basketball. No extended off days on the – well, there are off days. There's no extended 2 or 3 day off days for quite some time. Rockets are about to settle into an every other day routine, play Thursday, play Saturday, then play Monday. So we won't have to go through this long dry spell, hopefully, for quite some time. Again, the game is 9:30. It's a late game. Even by Utah standards, it's late because it's the back half of that nationally televised TNT doubleheader. But, yeah, 9:30 TNT, and of course, here at Locked On Rockets, we'll have you covered either shortly thereafter or first thing Friday morning with a recap of how the Rockets do. So until then, go out and get your rest, Houston, and we'll talk more tomorrow when the Rockets and Jazz tip off in Utah.